From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Not everyone was able to leave the Grand Princess cruise ship yesterday. Some passengers ended up spending one more night on board with the slow and careful process of taking passengers first who were sick with COVID-19. Denise Morse from Davis had talked with our newsroom yesterday, expecting that she and her husband would be leaving yesterday. She's on the phone now, though, with the rest of the story. Hi, Denise.
Good morning, Beth.
Where are you?
I'm sitting in my stateroom, and I'm looking at the Golden Gate. No, at the Bay Bridge right now. We're on the port side, so we're looking at the bay. The starboard side is where they're disembarking.
Okay.
We're kind of frustrated here. We found out this morning that 407 people were taken off. Canadians were chartered out last night at 9, and today they're hoping to get all the Californians off and also a flight to England. So we'll have people left on ship probably overnight again.
What are you being told about your specific situation?
Well, it's a problem because communication has been really poor. Our captain, he's just been steady and he's been clear, but he's been given limited information. He's been given inaccurate information. And this morning he was the most frustrated we've heard him. He said that he doesn't get information, so he doesn't, and then he will get information. It will change and he will not be told. And then we on board will watch television and learn something new that he's just found out or he hasn't learned. So it seems that England's getting their people off. Canada's gotten their people off. We Californians, we've got our tags now to say that we're going to leave, but I'm not confident. It's getting really frustrating.
Why do you think you're still on board? And perhaps this has something to do with your health status, right?
It's possible. Both my husband and I are ambulatory. We don't have health issues. But today this announcement said that wheelchairs we won't have assistance. If someone needs a wheelchair today, it won't happen. So they must have left people on board that are able to walk off.
So the communication you're having right now is if someone delivers a meal tray or fresh towels to your room. I guess you have a balcony, so you can talk to people via the balcony up or down or a side of you.
Yes, we have people next door that are from Oklahoma. Some people above us are from Boston. So we're hearing that some people have received these tags. They have color-coded tags for different groups going to different places. And some people have evidently received tags that they're going to be going to Georgia. So we don't even know yet if we're going to be held at Travis or at Miramar.
There's been some discussion about this quarantine period, the 14-day quarantine period. It sounds like a scientific and then policy discussion. Any more about a timetable once you do move somewhere?
Yes, they gave us a letter this morning. In fact, I'm going to go see if I can grab it. And it said that we would, it's an order that we would be quarantined, but they would reevaluate after 72 hours and then they would reissue orders. So to me, that read that possibly if we don't show any symptoms for 72 hours, we can go home quarantined or a shorter quarantine. It hasn't been clear, but it's the first sign I've seen that we may not be quarantined for 14 days.
Denise,
my husband just found it.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
It seems that you've been in pretty good spirits. You don't necessarily sound in great spirits today, but tell me about this overall experience and is this disembarking time different?
Yes, it is different. I think when we were out being held, we were just we felt like there was a plan being put in place. It was a lot unsettling when our president said he would like us to stay on board. But we trusted cooler heads would prevail, and we were okay. Our spirits were good. We were being taken care of. We had food. I mean, we had a balcony. We had fresh air. So we were okay. But now, yesterday, I think it's anticipation. You're so excited that you're going to get off. You're going to be taken away from the possibility of contracting COVID-19. So we came into the Port of Oakland, and it was really hopeful, and we were encouraged that we would get off soon. But the news was so sporadic and a not clear direction. And so I think we were asked to get up early at 7 and be ready, packed, showered, clean clothes, and then we don't hear anything all day. So that's been hard. I'm appreciating when people are having to be kept in confinement. It's challenging.
Are you an experienced cruise vacationer?
No, not at all. My husband and I are, you know, we wanted some simple vacation. We thought Hawaii would be fun. We thought, well, it's going out of San Francisco. We would take Amtrak into the city and enjoy Hawaii, not have to plan hotels or a rental car. So this was just kind of an experiment to see how we would like cruises.
Something else I'm interested in, we're talking on your cell phone now. You mentioned watching TV, but talk to me about staying in touch with people and connecting with social media at all. I don't know if you use Facebook or have followed anything on Twitter. Speak to me more about that.
Well, I don't have a Facebook account. My husband does, but I don't think he's posted anything. He's posted on Twitter. Oh, he has posted two postings on Facebook. We've had, thank God for cell phones, we've had a lot of friends that are contacting us, and we kind of don't watch the news much. We kind of can only take a little bit at a time. We've got Fox, MSNBC, and CSNBC and BBC. They have a lot of movies. We've watched some movies, but we haven't, we kind of take the television in doses, but we learn a lot from our friends that are reading different articles and hearing different things. So we kind of have appreciated that connection with our cell phones. And my husband just is doing his Tai Chi. We've been exercising and reading and meditating and doing, I don't know, Sudokus and things like that.
You sound like you're managing it pretty well. I think it was late last week, maybe Thursday, when you found out that in the group that had previously cruised on this ship was the man in Placer County who died of COVID-19. And I'm sure that changed the tone of the trip for everybody, didn't it?
It did. By the time we learned that, I believe it was Thursday afternoon. And we were having lunch. We were down in one of the dining rooms, and the announcement was made that we were not going to go to Mexico, that there had been a case of COVID-19 on board on the previous cruise, and that we would be going directly back to San Francisco. So we were asked then to go to our staterooms and to stay in our staterooms. So everybody did go to their rooms, and then as far as the atmosphere on the ship, we were all confined, so we could go out on our balcony and we could talk to people. But people were pretty upbeat. It's really interesting how they were, you know, they chatted. We talked about where we were from, and It wasn't tense. In fact, it isn't even now. I was out on the balcony this morning, and people more are talking about whether they've gotten a tag, where they think they may go, just the logistics of the situations, where their cars are. Most of these people are retired, except there are some families. There was a family with three children that were taken off yesterday, which I'm really glad they were, because that's got to be hard to be in a room with three or five children. There are a couple. We don't have many children on board, but there are a few families that have little ones.
Okay, well, this is day 19 for you. Maybe this will be the day, but you're not certain, are you?
No, I'm not certain, but I'm hopeful. We have our bag. Actually, they took our bags, so that is a good sign. We looked out the door, and our bags are gone. So I'm hopeful, and I'm hopeful it's Travis Air Force Base.
All right. Good luck, Denise, to you and David. We wish you the best, and thanks for checking in with us this morning.
You're welcome. Thanks. Bye-bye.
That is Denise Morse, waiting to leave the Grand Princess cruise ship, hoping to get home to Davis soon. UC Davis Academic Director Dr. Andy Jones is on the phone, and he's often our go-to expert on social media. Hi, Dr. Jones. You just heard how important a cell phone call can be, right?
Absolutely. Good morning, Beth.
So give me some of your observations about coronavirus, COVID-19, and related issues in the social media world.
Well, on social media, it seems that COVID-19 is all that people are talking about. And there's a lot of information that's being shared, and there's a lot of misinformation. Sometimes on social media, people will amplify the good work of you and other reporters who provide us firsthand accounts, for instance, of conversations with Denise Morse and others who are being affected directly or indirectly by the virus. Other times, there's all sorts of misinformation and conspiracy theories that's presented. In most cases, there is a conversation going on. And so that, just as Denise said, cooler heads will prevail. A lot of times, information follows upon misinformation so that people can stay informed. But sometimes people aren't always looking for the truth. They're looking for confirmation of their biases, their concerns, and even their paranoid thoughts about who might be out to get them.
You're around students, and students use social media in different ways than some of us do of other generations, I'll say. So what are your students saying?
It's interesting with students, because every time someone of our age, Beth, gravitates towards a social medium, students want to get off of it because that's where all of the adults and parents are.
Right.
And so they've moved, many of them, from Facebook to Twitter and Twitter to Instagram. Here at UC Davis, my students depend upon a Twitter-like application that they can get to their phones called Wildfire, which is a way that they share all sorts of information, not only concerns about the coronavirus, but also asking for help in classes, conjecture on if and when UC Davis classes will be going online so that we can encourage social distancing, and other sorts of information that all of us are concerned and talking about.
I think the tone of a conversation on social media changes, obviously, as the event and the information change. And we're at a point now, for example, where there are a lot of recipes or formulas posted online about how to make your own hand sanitizer gel. You've seen this, right?
Yeah, I've read about that, some people are talking about mixing vodka with aloe vera and so forth. Luckily, scientists are also a part of that conversation and are warning people away from those sort of recipes. But of course, we're having those conversations because of the sort of shortages that we would never expect to see in the Amazon Prime era or the Costco era, when it's so easy to get consumer goods. But because some people have been hoarding, gathering these different necessities, some people who were caught unawares or who don't have a large supply of hand sanitizers in their homes, are trying to make do. Scientists are saying, of course, that if you just wash your hands regularly, that that's actually more effective than an alcohol-based sanitizer.
I had happened to reach out to one of the companies that makes one of the very well-known and popular hand sanitizing gel to check in. And because it is FDA-regulated, the company isn't actively doing interviews, but they did send me on a sort of fact sheet the point that there is a demand surge preparedness team that runs in the background at all the time and has been fully activated to coordinate response and respond to an increase in demand. And this kind of thing happens. It's happened with masks. We saw it happen here with the N95s during the wildfire time. So the social media platforms become sort of a place of commerce in a way, too.
Absolutely. Commerce that's sometimes unfortunate, people selling hand sanitizer and selling masks, when we've all heard that it's actually first responders and medical professionals who should have first access to those sorts of supplies. But there's also a commerce of ideas. And whereas there is lots of screaming and alarmist ideas that are offered, often there are conversations as well. And for every person who links to some sort of alarmist and unscientific poll or conspiracy theory, I, at least amongst the people I follow on Twitter, for example, also see people reminding us of recommendations from the CDC or articles from the NIH, that information is available to us. And if you follow responsible people, then often you'll have responsible information referred to you.
We shared with you yesterday a letter that had been brought to our attention from in West Sacramento, the Washington Unified School District. This was actually an entirely fake letter that advised that schools were being closed. So I don't know where this fits in the spectrum of examples that you've seen, but it was certainly something the district had to respond to immediately.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to know precisely who put together that letter, but we all know that high school students, for example, like to prank their elders. And what's happened in the age of Photoshop, desktop printing, and social media, that those pranks can go a long way before they're discovered and before the accurate information is released. So I suspect that that's who that is. It's almost the equivalent of, people announcing that back east we would have snow days on days when we found out eventually that indeed we did have to go to school. And it's a little bit like that such pranksters are feeding upon the fears and concerns that we have, but also trying to get some time away from school themselves.
So to clarify, Washington Unified School District in West Sacramento does entirely have its schools and classes and campuses open right now, but you can go to the school's website for more information. Just a side note, could I ask you about UC Davis and the plan going forward? A number of campuses are shifting to online classes.
Absolutely. And right now we're in week 10, day two of week 10 out of 10 at UC Davis, which means that classes are wrapping up. And one endeavor that I've been engaged in with a bunch of my colleagues at Academic Technology Services is to provide faculty the information that they need if they decide to hold their classes online, or even more difficult, hold their exams online. Mm. And so we're at the point now where we're offering faculty maximum flexibility on how they want to conclude this quarter, whether they want to meet in person or online, because it's really important to stay ahead of these sorts of emergencies, these sorts of situations, so that when we find out what the policy pronouncements are, either from Yolo County Health Boards or from the chancellor and the leadership team at UC Davis that we can respond accordingly. We're lucky that we've got a really strong learning management system in Canvas at UC Davis, which means that all of our faculty are putting information online and teach a kind of a hybrid course that makes it much easier for them to teach the last few classes online if they choose to do so.
Okay.
So I think we're in pretty good shape.
One final note, though, this is a true piece of information. Today is your birthday, isn't it?
It sure is, Beth.
So happy birthday to you, Andy Jones.
Thank you very much, Beth. I always appreciate a chance to join you on this radio show. I get much more feedback on this radio show than with my weekly show on KDBS. And now, because of our conversation, I'm sure I'll get many more tweeted and Facebooked greetings on my birthday, which is very nice.
Well,
I appreciate that.
You deserve all the birthday wishes. Thank you so much for always being so responsive and available to us, and have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you for the opportunity. Stay
all right.
safe.
That is Dr. Andy Jones, UC Davis Academic Director. By the way, there are some basketball families who are pretty excited about the continuing playoffs. And for now, I do want to say the CIF state finals are still on as planned. We don't have an update at this moment about that Sheldon-Dublin game that is supposed to be played tonight. As soon as we hear something, we will, of course, let you know. But I'm sure the families will be the first to know. So we're going to take a break and continue with more conversation about coronavirus. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. By next week, there should be 4 million COVID-19 tests across the country. That's from researcher Dr. Anthony Fauci from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. He says missteps that limited the availability of tests initially have been corrected. Here's a bit more from Dr. Fauci in a conversation this morning on NPR.
There are four areas of the country now that have what we call community spread. And that's in California, that's in Florida, that's in New York, and that's in Washington State. And in those places, what's being done is what we call community mitigation. In other words, try and socially distance oneself.
So that guidance came a bit late for hundreds and hundreds of passengers who were on the Grand Princess cruise ship before this group that's now at the Port of Oakland. And the man who died of COVID-19 in Placer County last week was on that cruise. So was a woman who is joining us now by phone with her daughter, Liz. Liz, welcome to Insight. Glad to have you with us. Hello, Liz.
This is Liz's mother.
Oh, good. Hi, Mom. Glad to have you there.
Hi.
And we have
Hi.
Liz, too. Okay.
Yes.
I do want to let everyone know that we've agreed not to use your full names because of concerns you have about work and the vagueness of the circumstances you're in. But, Mom, you've been quarantined for a while, correct?
Yes, I have.
So do you have any symptoms? Have you had some illness?
Well, what happened was when we left the ship, I had a small cough, and I had that cough prior to the ship, but I was cleared by my doctor to go on the cruise. And when I got home, I did go out in the community. And then when I, on the 3rd of March, I contacted my doctor because I had a lot of symptoms that concerned me. And I had heard about the Placerville person from our ship, but he had not passed, I don't believe. She contacted the Department of Health, and I immediately was contacted by them that day. Previous to that, I came with a large group of people, and we've been in communication. And so people all were self-quarantining themselves on the 3rd because of work concerns. We were contacted on the 4th by Princess by email, and on the 5th, all of us got a survey from the Department of Health. So I was contacted on the 3rd to come in and have a test, but prior to that, we had another person in our group that had the Department of Health come to his house and do a test there. So I was surprised that they wanted me to go out, but I was masked. They told me not to leave the car and mask, and then I went to the Department of Health and went in and had the test on Thursday afternoon.
I'm going to pause you to back up just so we all get the mm-hmm. chronology of this right. Your part mm-hmm. of the cruise was February 11th to the 21st.
Right. And we left the 21st.
When the mm-hmm. boat came back to San Francisco on the 21st, mm-hmm. and that was mm-hmm. the boat that included this man from Placer County, how many people got off the ship and what kind of screening went on when you all got off the ship?
Well, at that time, this gentleman's case was not even known. So we left just as a normal cruise would get off the ship. We all left as we normally do.
Hundreds and hundreds of you, correct?
Oh, thousands. Yeah, there was probably 3,000 on the ship, and we went everywhere. That's my concern because my understanding was as soon as the case was known in Placerville, the Department of Health sent out this email to all of us.
But by then it was March 4th.
Right, 5th. I was out. I had several occasions I was out in the community. That's why I'm upset today, because of the testing is taking so long. All of our group that were tested, there were only just a handful of us that were tested due to work. People knew that we were on the cruise and their work required it. Some had symptoms, some did not. We were all told to quarantine until the 8th of March. And if we had any symptoms, to call our doctor or call directly to the health department. So, you know, my upset about this whole thing is when I went in for my test, I was told I would get the results in 48 hours. And that was Thursday afternoon. And I said, okay. So I called Saturday, Sunday. Nobody at the health department. It was just the dispatcher there that knew nothing. And finally, I called Monday. I still don't have the results. And now they're saying 3 to 7 days wait. And if I wasn't a conscientious person, I have not been out of the house since the 3rd of March. And I'm waiting for the results. I am improving. I would say I'm 95% healthy. And I have been contacting my doctor, but I have not been feeling well all week. And I have not been able to get to the doctor for them to listen to my chest. I didn't feel I was sick enough to call 911. So I would have done that. And with communication with all of the other people I knew that was on the ship, I knew they were all getting negative test results back very quickly. Yolo County was much quicker. So I think they're telling me today that due to the amount of tests, it's taken 3 to 7 days now. And when I went in for the test, I said I heard that there was a 4-hour test that I could get the results back. And the county, Sacramento Health Public Services, said that our county does not have that test available.
Your husband was on this cruise with you, I believe, wasn't he?
Yes, and he was told to quarantine until the 8th, and I told him, no, you're not going to leave the house until I find out the results. So he's been with me at the house, but he has not been told anything that he can go out, and the unknown is he a carrier even though there's no symptoms? This is what we don't know about this disease, and that's the thing. If you haven't been tested from that original ship, if you have not been tested, you have had no symptoms, are we completely clear? That's the question that the scientists need to tell all of us that was on that ship and everybody else involved.
Can I ask how informed you feel that your doctor is about the situation?
The doctor I called the doctor on the 3rd, gave her my symptoms. She called the Department of Health immediately. And then I messaged her back and said, you know, my chest is not good. I'm still not feeling well. I had no fever ever, so I never really panicked. I always felt the fever was the key, but I did have a cough that wouldn't stop, a dry cough, and I had deep chest congestion. So without the fever, I always thought this is not the virus. This could be bronchitis. So she suggested, you know, the care of typical, you know, take Robitussin and humidifier, stay home. If the symptoms get worse, call her. And I was improving every day. So I have been improving. The key here is we know people around the community, everybody coughs. Everybody goes out with just a common cold and flu. And we don't know if that's what it is or the virus. And that's the panic I think people are feeling. And so I'm just waiting. And my family, I did expose myself to my family when I first got back. And I was out in the community, and I want to know my test results so I can notify these people.
Well, I appreciate you talking with us, especially mm-hmm. about this 12-day gap, as you say, from the time mm-hmm. you got off the mm-hmm. boat to when you were first contacted. I'm sure there were a number of people in your same situation. Also, it sounds like you're waiting for the definitive answer from mm-hmm. that test.
Yes. And I want to compliment Princess Cruises. I've been on that cruise that ran Princess at least 4 times. It's an excellent, excellent ship. And the staff, I never once saw any of the crew coughing on us or looking like they were ill. They had wash stations on the ship this time versus just hand sanitizers as you entered the buffet where they said, please wash your hands for 20 seconds. They had hot water. Our rooms were kept just perfectly clean. I have no complaints against Princess. You know, when you're in a large group of people in a group setting, a disease or cough, things can spread. But I have absolutely no complaints on the Princess cruises. They contacted me, or my husband and I, email on the 4th of March first. Then the county sent us a survey letter announcing this on the 5th of March. So the Princess was proactive.
Well, we will keep in touch with you to see what the rest of the story is. I think the best news is to hear that you are improving at this point. And again, mm-hmm. I thank you for the conversation, because I'm sure there are other people in the same doubt, not even necessarily mm-hmm. on a cruise ship, but just in terms mm-hmm. of exposure in the community.
Yes.
All right. Yes. Thank you so much for the conversation. Thank you to your daughter for helping to arrange our availability to talk with you. And good luck. I hope you continue to feel better and better every day.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. And so she is calling from Sacramento County. We're going to check in right now with UC Davis infectious disease specialist Dr. Dean Blumberg, who continues to join us throughout the outbreak and this movement in the community. Dr. Blumberg, thanks for your time again.
Thank you, Beth.
Give me your reaction to that situation. And it does speak to this discussion that's happening today about quarantine.
Well, you know, it's very difficult for everybody, and the recommendations are changing all the time, and that's because this is an emerging infection, and we're learning more and more about it. And as it spreads within the community, then the strategies change in terms of treating and containing the virus. So it is a really changing landscape, and it can be quite frustrating for patients and also clinicians who are seeking a lot of information and what to do.
So Johns Hopkins is releasing new details about the incubation time of this virus. There's debate about whether a 14-day quarantine is necessary. For now, the World Health Organization is going to stick with it. What are you doing? What's the UC Davis policy right now?
Well, we're following the guidance from federal, state, and local officials, and we feel that they've done a very good job communicating with us what to do. The 14 days is the best estimate, although, you know, the virus doesn't, like, read a book, right? So sometimes in some patients, I'm sure in a very small percentage, it might be an incubation period longer than 14 days. So some estimates say that it could be a 30-day incubation period. But again, that would be in a very, very small percentage. The vast majority of cases will be symptomatic within the first week after exposure and infection.
So the woman I spoke to on the phone just a moment ago, in a conversation we had yesterday, she felt confused about whether she could take over-the-counter medications for her symptoms. And she seemed to say maybe it was an interface with the testing. For people having cold symptoms that may or may not be related to COVID-19, what's the recommendation?
Certainly, people should can take over-the-counter medications, and they should if it will make them more comfortable. I think the concern is that if public health is recommending that people be screened for fever and people are taking antipyretics such as Tylenol or aspirin, that could mask the fever. Mm-hmm. And so I think that might have been part of the confusing message that could be out there. That being said, as you mentioned, the quarantine recommendations are changing by the day as the virus gets out into the community. It's not feasible anymore to have people quarantined for so long periods. They need to be out and about and go about their business, and it just doesn't make any sense anymore to have people have these strict quarantines. We should be following routine public health advice for all infections, which is if you have a fever, if you're symptomatic, you shouldn't be exposing others, and you should stay home.
All right, let me get an update again on the situation at UC Davis in terms of patients with COVID-19 in the med center and those healthcare workers who have been watched or quarantined.
Yeah, so the vast majority of healthcare workers are no longer in quarantine and are returning to work. I'm not aware of any healthcare worker being infected from exposure. The Med Center has plenty of personal protective equipment like masks, gloves, gowns, so we're fully prepared for any kind of influx of patients as this virus spreads in the community.
Okay, has the Solano County patient gone home now?
You know, I haven't had an update on that from yesterday, so I'm not aware of that.
And what's the turnaround time on testing right now, Dr. Blumberg?
So the turnaround time on the tests that go to the county is about 4 hours, but they have limited capacity for testing. So only the most important, the most severe cases are being tested by the county. And so the rest of the tests are being sent to private labs, Quest and LabCorp. And for them, the turnaround time is about 3 days. If it's negative, and if it's positive, these positives need to be confirmed at the CDC. So that will result in a further delay for getting results.
Okay, thank you. Plus the advice, wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands.
Exactly. And if you're sick and symptomatic, please stay home.
All right. Thanks, as always, Dr. Blumberg.
Thank you.
Dr. Dean Blumberg is Chief of Infectious Diseases at UC Davis Children's Hospital. We're going to talk about some of the financial impact of this outbreak. Ooh, the stock market yesterday. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.